الله الرحمن الرحيم نحمده ونصلي على رسوله الكريم أما بعد. So the last we have discussed regarding the various salah that a person performs. These namazes were performed by the various Anbiya alayhi salat wa salam. Like we mentioned that the Fajr salah was first performed by Adam alayhi salat wa salam. When he was sent into the world, there was darkness. And when he had seen brightness, then in gratitude he read his two rakats of namaz. And that's how we got the Fajr namaz. And the Zuhr salah was because of Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salatu wasalam. He was the first one to perform it when he went to slaughter his son, Hazrat Ismail alayhi salatu wasalam. So the first to perform the Zuhr namaz was Hazrat Ibrahim alayhi salatu wasalam. The Asr salah, we said that was Hazrat Yunus alayhi salatu wasalam when he was thrown out of the belly of the fish. So at that time when he was thrown onto the shores, Hazrat Yunus alayhi salatu wasalam performed the Asr salah. The Maghrib salah, the first person to perform it was Hazrat Isa alayhi salatu wasalam. And the Isha salah, this was performed first by Hazrat Musa alayhi salatu wasalam. You know that Musa alayhi salatu wasalam, there was one time when he came into the town and there were two people that were fighting in the town. Allah Ta'ala mentions this in detail in the Quran Sharif. So when these two people were fighting, there was one person that was an Israeli from the people of Musa alayhi salam, and the other person was a Coptic, the people of Fir'aun. So Musa alayhi salam was very, very strong. So Musa alayhi salatu wasalam gave him one shot. So that one strike, that one slap of Musa alayhi salam, it was so powerful. فَقَضَى عَلَيْهِ فَوَكَزَهُ مُوسَى فَقَضَى عَلَيْهِ. That man passed away there and there. So the next day Musa alayhi salam had another incident. So nobody knew on the first day who killed this person. But the next day, when they had the second incident, so this very same person, he was fighting with somebody else. So Musa alayhi salatu wasalam said that you're on the wrong path. So he got frightened. He got frightened of Musa alayhi salam. So he said, أَتُرِيدُ أَن تَقْتُلَنِي كَمَا قَتَلْتَ نَفْسًا بِالْأَمْسِ. He thought Musa alayhi salam is going to catch him. So he said, you want to kill me like how you killed somebody yesterday. So this story now became exposed. And then it reached the palace of Fir'aun. So the people that were in the palace, the ministers, they were now plotting to get Musa alayhi salam and kill Musa alayhi salatu wasalam. So at that time Musa alayhi salatu wasalam left and he went to Madian. And he remained in Madian, he remained in Madian, he remained in Madian. All this is in detail in the Quran. And he got married to the daughter of Shu'aib alayhi salam. And he remained there, he worked for Shu'aib alayhi salatu wasalam. So when Musa alayhi salatu wasalam was now returning from Madian, he was coming back to Egypt. It was night. So at that time when he left Madian, Musa alayhi salatu wasalam read namaz and then he left. So that was the Isha salah that was performed. So the first person to perform the Isha salah was Hazrat Musa alayhi salam. And obviously on the way he lost his route and he seen a fire and he went for that fire and then he ended up in the Mount of Tur. So see the namaz that we got. All the namazes we got of all the Anbiya alayhi, all the Anbiya alayhi salam, whether which Adam alayhi salatu wasalam had performed, or Ibrahim alayhi salatu wasalam, or Yunus alayhi salatu wasalam, or Isa alayhi salam, or Musa alayhi salatu wasalam. All the namazes we have got. Now because the salah is so important, we find that anything that becomes a barrier, that becomes an obstacle from performing salah, Shariat has removed those obstacles. Shariat said that that, for example, will become makruh. Or that is something that is disliked in Shariat. Because this became an obstacle from performing salah. For example, Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Kana Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, Yakrahu al-Nawm qabla al-Isha. That before the Isha salah, Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam disliked that a person sleeps. After Maghrib salah, a person is tired, now he wants to go and sleep after Maghrib salah. So this is makruh. Why? Why is it considered as makruh? Because if a person, he goes to sleep after Maghrib salah, most probably he is not going to wake up for Isha Salah. Next thing, he is going to wake up in the morning. So therefore Sharia said that this sleep after the Maghrib Salah will become an obstacle, will become a barrier from you performing your Isha Salah. So therefore Sharia said that this is makruh. This a person shouldn't do. Yes, the fuqaha have given permission. They say, for example, if a person is very, very sick, or a person he worked the whole day, he is extremely tired, now he wants to take a little nap. But on condition that somebody promises him, somebody takes the responsibility, they say, okay, no problem, you can go to sleep. I take the responsibility of awakening you for the Isha Salah. So then it becomes permissible for a person to sleep. But if somebody doesn't take that responsibility now to wake this person up for the Isha Salah, It's makruh for a person to sleep after the Maghrib Salah, because he's most probably he's going to miss the Isha Salah. Similarly, it is mentioned that wal hadith, the same hadith, kana Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam yakrahu an-nawm qabla al-Isha wal haditha ba'dahu. And Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam also dislikes that a person he engages in conversation after the Isha Salah. That after your Isha Salah is over, a person finished the Isha Salah, now you must go and sleep. Now a person shouldn't engage in futile, in useless conversation. In the hadith, these conversations that are made, that take place after the Isha Salah, they are referred to as Samara. Samara actually means when the moon is lit, the 15 moon, the bright moon is lit. So in the Arabs, what used to happen, that at night, they used to sit down when the moon is shining, they used to sit and talk. They never have entertainment like how we have today, technology. And they didn't have street lights like how we have, and lights in their homes. So when the moon was now bright, it was shining, they would sit at night. And they will engage in storytelling, they will tell stories. So this will continue into the late hours of the morning. So what happens if a person now is going to engage in these conversations, he's going to sleep away. And he's not going to wake up for tahajjud namaz. He's not going to wake up now for his fajr namaz. So this becomes an obstacle from your tahajjud namaz. This becomes an obstacle from your fajr namaz. So therefore Sharia says that Isha namaz is over, you don't have any important work, then go and sleep. Yes, Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala mentions that there were those occasions when Nabi Kareem sallallahu alayhi wa sallam had to discuss certain matters, certain affairs of the Muslimin with Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala. Look at the adab he gave to Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala. And Hazrat Umar radiallahu ta'ala used to say, وَأَنَا مَعَهُمَا. I used to be with Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and Abu Bakr. The matter was between Abu Bakr and Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. And I was the third person, I wasn't the main person. This is the adab that he had. He gave to Hazrat Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala, Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He says, I used to be with Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam and Abu Bakr radiallahu ta'ala. So, if there is, for example, a bayan, some talk that is taking place after the Isha Salah, so then there's no problem. A person can sit. But then too, the talk shouldn't be of such a nature, or the program shouldn't be of such a nature, that is now taking a person into the early hours of the morning, 12 o'clock and 1 o'clock, and then a person goes to sleep, and next he's going to miss his Fajr Salah. So the Dini program also must be kept in place, that up to a certain extent, person has sufficient rest, and he can then wake up for his Fajr Namaz. Then also, one of the kitabs that we're reading lately, of Hazrat Maulana Abdul Rauf Sahab Sukarwi, who was a Khalifa of Mufti Muhammad Shafi Sahab Rahmatullah Alayh. Many, many bayanat, many discourses of Mufti Shafi Sahab Rahmatullah Alayh, he had compiled, he had put into book form. So he says that many people have this problem, that they cannot wake up for the Fajr Salah. Many people, they complain also that it's very, very difficult to wake up for the Fajr Salah. So in this kitab, he has prescribed certain aspects, that if a person, he practices upon this, then it will become very easy for a person to wake up for the Fajr Salah. I'll just quickly go through these things, might be of benefit to somebody inshallah. The first thing that he mentioned is that the head, whoever is the father of the house, he should stipulate a particular time, that at this time, the lights are going to be switched off. Everyone has to sleep at this particular time. Hazrat Qari Ismail Thaqsab, Rahmatullah Ali, our Ustad, who taught us Qirat also, who was the vice principal of the Madrasa. So in his wasiyat, when he passed away, he had written that every day at 10 o'clock or 10:30, I cannot recall exactly, but around 10 or 10:30, he said, all my family members, they must go to sleep. Hazrat Qari Sahab, Rahmatullah Ali, was such also, that every morning, he was very punctual with his tahajjud namaz. In the morning, he would be in the masjid, making his tahajjud namaz, making tilawat of the Quran right up to the time of Fajr Salah. So he said that this must be a cut-off time. So he says that was the head of every home should do. He should have a cut-off time at home, that this is the time everyone must go to sleep. So they know they can have sufficient rest, and they can wake up for tahajjud namaz, for Fajr Salah. The second thing he mentioned, he says, have an early supper. That normally, when we eat early, for example, a person is eating after Asr, or sometimes in the winter months he has to eat, for example, after Maghrib Salah. So he says then he's going to go later for Isha Salah, so that food he's going to digest now. So when he's sleeping, he sleeps with a light stomach. Now when you're sleeping with a light stomach, in the morning it becomes very easy for a person to wake up, because he's sleeping light, so he'll wake up easily in the morning. So have an early supper. The third thing that he mentioned, that at night, we should reduce the consumption of liquids. During the day, it's important, or doctors, they prescribe that you should have 8 to 10 glasses of water. In fact, they say the first thing in the morning that a person wakes up, first thing in the morning he should have water.
because it gets all the organs in the body functioning. So if we have water in the morning, so a lot of liquids in the morning, during the day, no problem. But excessive liquids at night, this causes laziness. Now a person finds difficulty to wake up for Fajr Salah, to wake up for Tahajjud Namaz, if he has a lot of liquids at the time of sleeping. So reduce the consumption of liquids when a person goes to sleep. The fourth thing that he mentioned, he says, if, for example, a person, he couldn't have an early supper. It happens sometimes a person has gone out in the path of Allah Ta'ala, or he's gone for some program. Now he came back home. So he's gone for his gush and he came back home now. So he's going to have his supper a little later. So if a person has to have the supper a little later, then also it's no problem. But then take at least 40 steps. Take a walk. So what happens, by the time you go to sleep, already food has digested. Again, you're going to sleep with a light stomach. So a person should do some exercise or some walking before he sleeps. The fifth thing he says that a person must set an alarm according to his need. Some people have said they light sleepers. So you just go to sleep and there's a slight noise and a person woke up. Now he can't sleep for the rest of the night. That's why, you know, in i'tikaf also we should be very careful. There are people that are light sleepers. If a person wants to make tilawat or something, go to an area where you're gonna not, where you won't disturb other people. So for such people, they need a very soft alarm also. They'll just wake up one time. Some people, the whole building will fall and they still won't wake up. So for them, they need a very, very loud alarm. And that alarm also shouldn't be kept next to a person, but rather at the feet or at a distance. So he has to wake up now and go and switch that off. The sixth thing he wrote, he says that before sleeping, people can try this. Many, many people have benefited from this. He said, recite the last four verses of Surah Kahf. Last four verses of Surah Kahf. إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَعَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ كَانَتْ لَهُمْ جَنَّاتُ الْفِرْدَوْسِ نُزُلًا. From there till the end of the surah, just four verses, about half a page. And a person that recites this and he goes to sleep, inshallah he will wake up. In another place I read of in Amal al-Qur'ani of Mullah Thanvi rahmatullahi alayhi, where he has also written that if a person reads the verses إِنَّ فِي خَلْقِ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَاخْتِلَافِ اللَّيْلِ وَالنَّهَارِ, the fourth para, so in Ali Imran, towards the ending of Ali Imran, and a person, he makes niyyah that I want to wake up at a certain time, Allah Ta'ala makes it easier, a person, he will wake up at that particular time that he desires. But anyway, a person can start with this, the last few, four verses of Surah Kahf. And the last thing that he mentions, he says that when a person, he is going to sleep, he knows he's got a weakness, he can't wake up for his Fajr Namaz. So he says, the last thing at night, read two rakats of Namaz. And then go to sleep. And then make dua to Allah Ta'ala. Confess to Allah Ta'ala of your weakness. Say, Allah, I am weak. I can't wake up for Fajr Namaz. I have a lot of difficulty in waking up. So Allah, I ask of your assistance that you help me, you assist me to wake up for the Fajr Namaz. And Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala will then make it easy for this person in a short period of time to start reading his Fajr Namaz. The Qari Sahib that was here in the Jalsa, Qari Bodiyat Sahib, he had mentioned that many people, they involve in certain gunas. And he says, these gunas, we can't give it up. Person says that, I can't give up this guna that I'm involved in. So he said, Mullah Thanvi rahmatullahi alayhi mentioned that you involved in that guna and you committed that guna during the day. So he says, what you do the last thing at night, before you go to sleep, every day, read two rakats of namaz. Make tawbah to Allah Ta'ala and ask Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala to take you out of this guna. And he said, you'll see in a short while, in a very short period of time, Allah Ta'ala will take you out. So depend totally on Allah Ta'ala. Our alarm, everything, these are all asbab. The actual work will take place from where? From Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. So depend totally on Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala. Our Hazrat, he mentioned to us one incident that comes to mind, that there was one person, he was a very evil person. He used to drink, spend his day in the wrong way. So this person, when he had passed away, then nobody came for his janazah namaz. And his janazah was just lying there for 3 days. Nobody even picked it up. So his wife then decided to get hold of some laborers. And she told him, see, I'll pay you all a certain amount of money. You all take this person and you all go. How you all know how to give ghusl, you must give ghusl. And how you all know how to read janazah namaz, you all read. And if you all don't know, then you all just bury this person. So the laborers, they came, they got ready, they took the janazah. The moment they picked up this person, 3 days the body was lying. The moment they picked him up, the wali of the time, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala inspired him and said, my wali has passed away. Everyone knew him as so evil that nobody came for the janazah. But here, the wali of the time is told that my wali has passed away. Go and give him ghusl, kafan, read his janazah namaz and bury him. So when the great Buzruk of the town, he got up and he went, everybody followed. Everyone went with. So there was a big janazah. So after the janazah was over, then he decided to find out, inquire, that what special action this person had, that Allah Ta'ala says that my wali has passed away. So they came to the wife. So the wife said that, you know what, he was sharabi, kababi, whole day drinking. This was his life. So then she said that he had two other qualities. And it stands on these two qualities, Allah Ta'ala made his maghfirat. So he said, what are these two qualities? So she said, the first quality was this, that he always kept an orphan in the house, yatim. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam said, that myself and the person that takes care of a yatim, we'll be together in Jannat like this. We'll be together in Jannat. So whenever he would buy clothing, he will buy clothing for the orphan first, and then he will buy for himself. If he was to eat, he'll feed the orphan first, and then he will eat food. So this was one quality that he had. And the second quality he had, that he used to come in that state, intoxicated, that part of the morning. He used to take a ghusl in cold water. And then he used to stand on the musalla and read two rakats of namaz, and he used to make dua. And he used to say, Ya Allah, I don't know which corner of Jahannam you have got reserved for me. So even that two rakats of namaz he used to read, how Allah Ta'ala must have accepted that tawbah of that person. So a person read these two rakats of namaz. Ask Allah Ta'ala for assistance, and inshallah Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala will assist a person. So these were the advisors of Mawlana Abdul Rauf Sukarwi, who was the Khalifa of Mufti Muhammad Shafiq Sahab, Rahmatul Ali. So any obstacles, so we think that any obstacles that are there, so these obstacles have been removed. Then also we find that in regards to Salah, I'll just mention this last aspect and then we'll go into the Kitab. Just so that we understand the importance of Salah. So certain masail I've extracted from the Kitabs of Fiqh, from which we'll understand that how important or what importance have been attached to Salah. That absolutely nobody is exempted from Salah. For example, the Fuqaha have given one masla. They say that if a woman, she is on the verge of giving birth, she hasn't given birth as yet, she's going through labor pain, and we know how difficult this is. Many a times people phone, even today there was a phone call today, and a person he asked, he says, can my wife or this woman that is here, can she go for removal of the womb, because she cannot handle children anymore, it's too painful for her. So obviously it cannot just be done. There are many, many masail. When we need it, then find out from the ulama, find out from the Darul Iftas, what is the masail. So even at that stage when she's going through pain, she's not exempted from Salah. She's going through labor pains, but she still has to make her Salah. Fuqaha have written, I think Mullah Hussain also mentioned it now, that if a person, all his clothing happened to be napak, and you know that is a sharait, that is from amongst the sharait of Salah, a requisite of Salah. The place where you're performing Salah, that has to be parked. The clothing has to be parked. But if a person is in such a situation that his clothing is impure, totally, head to toe, and at that time he can't get any other clothing, he cannot even remove the clothing to wash the clothing that he is wearing. Sharia says if more than 3/4 of your clothing is napak, 3/4 or more, 75% or more of your clothing is napak, then either you perform Salah with the napak clothing. With the napak clothing you can perform Salah. And the second option that Sharia has given is that a person, he removes his clothing and he reads without clothing, even to that extent. Although Fuqaha have written that better option is to read with the clothing, because here your satar is going to be exposed. So with the napak clothing also, you will perform Salah, but Salah cannot be missed. A person, he has urine drops, the urine is dripping, or blood is dripping from his body. And this is continuous, it doesn't stop. He doesn't have that amount of time in which he can perform Salah, but because the urine is dropping, or the blood is dripping from the body. This person has to wait for one complete namaz time. And when he comes to the end of that salah time, then he will make his wudu and he will perform his salah with that blood dripping or the urine dripping. Then also he is not exempted. And he is now classified and categorized as a ma'zur. In every salah time he will just make one wudu, and if that illat, that cause is found once, he will just perform salah. Imam Muhammad rahmatullahi, he was a student of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullahi. When he was a young boy, one day he came to Imam Hanifa rahmatullahi, and he asked Imam Sahib rahmatullahi, he said, tell me that if a boy had performed his Isha Salah, he was not baligh, he hadn't reached the age of puberty, and he performed his Isha Salah, and he went to sleep. At night, while he was sleeping, he became baligh, he had a wet dream, he became baligh. So does he have to repeat that Isha Salah of his or not? So Imam Hanifa rahmatullah alayhi said that he has to repeat that Isha Salah, because what you have done prior to buluh, before puberty, that is nafil. For example, a father is going for Hajj, so he took his little child, 8 years old. He says, "You also come, take him for Hajj." Or the whole family goes for Hajj. Now those little children that were there, they performed Hajj, 8 years old, 9 years old, 10 years old, they perform Hajj, but they haven't reached the age of puberty. They are not baligh still. So will we say that the farz Hajj has been done and they absolved of their responsibility? No, they are not absolved of their responsibility. That which they have done before buluh, that is nafil. When they become baligh, then they will have to do it again for the second time. Now it has become farz upon them. So Imam Hanifa rahmatullah says, your namaz is not done. The namaz is not done of this person, he will have to repeat the salah. So Imam Muhammad rahmatullah, he went on one side and he performed his salah. So Imam Sahib rahmatullah understood that this boy asked about himself, a very intelligent boy. So he says that there's great hope, this boy will become something one day. So after some time, Imam Muhammad rahmatullah, he came to the majlis of Imam Sahib rahmatullah, and he said that, "I want to take admission into your madrasa." So Imam Hanifa rahmatullah asked him, "Are you hafizul Quran?" So he says, "No, I'm not hafizul Quran." Now the requisite to take admission into the madrasa of Imam Abu Hanifa rahmatullah was that you have to be hafizul Quran, because that was the time where they used to make istimbat of masail. They used to dwell directly into Quran, directly into hadith, and they used to extract masail of deen. So it was a requirement that a person has to be hafiz al-Quran. So he said, "No, I'm not hafiz al-Quran." So he said, "I can't take you in my madrasa." So Imam Muhammad rahmatullah alayhi, he went away. Mentioned he came back 7 days later, and he told Imam Sahib rahmatullah alayhi, he says that, "Test me, I've become hafiz of the Quran." In 7 days he memorized the whole Quran, he became hafiz of the Quran. And what a great imam he became thereafter. He mentioned that in the masail of miras, inheritance, which is very difficult, in the masail of inheritance, the fatwa is generally given on the view of Imam Muhammad rahmatullah alayhi. In the masail of qaza, of judgment, the fatwa is always given on the view of Imam Abu Yusuf rahmatullah alayhi. So this is where Imam Muhammad rahmatullah alayhi had reached. It's mentioned regarding another person, incident just comes to mind, that Hisham bin Kalbi rahmatullah alayhi. So he says that his uncle, this is the miracle of Quran Sharif, he says that his uncle used to always speak on him about his hifz. Perhaps he was very weak in his hifz. There's a kitab, Fazail Huffaz al-Quran. It was in a bookshop, I don't know if it's still there. Very, very big kitab, over 1,000 pages. So in there this incident has been written. So his uncle used to always speak on him, that, "You know what, you're not even learning your Quran, you're not doing hifz." So he says, "One day I went into one room and I said that I won't come out of this room until I make hifz of my Quran." And then he says that, "Perhaps I don't think anyone in the world has achieved what I have achieved." He says, "I came out of the room within 3 days as a hafiz of the Quran Sharif." But then he says that, "I made such an error that perhaps nobody made such an error also." Because many a times when a person, he has achieved something which nobody else has achieved, then pride comes in. And when pride comes in, then a person falls immediately. For example, a person is reading Quran, he's reading Tarawih, and he's reading very well. Now that ujab comes into him, see how well I'm reading. The moment that thought comes there, he'll make a mistake. Allah Ta'ala's system it is. He'll make some error. He's giving a bayan and the thought comes that what a bayan I'm giving. Then day he'll say something wrong that he wasn't supposed to say. So that pride comes out of the person. So he says that, "I made a mistake which nobody made." And he says that, "One day I looked into the mirror and I looked at my beard and it was already a foot length." It was the practice of Abdullah bin Umar radiallahu ta'ala, that when the beard would reach a foot length, then what was beyond the foot, Abdullah bin Umar radiallahu ta'ala would trim. So he says, and I said, "Let me trim my beard now." So he says that I held my beard and I was going to trim. But instead of trimming below, he says, I trimmed on top. So he says, the error that I made, nobody made. And what I have achieved, perhaps nobody has achieved. So this is the Quran Sharif. So nevertheless, we are talking about the importance of salam. So if a person, another masala that the fuqaha have written, for example, if a person, he doesn't even know the qibla, he goes for salah but he doesn't know the qibla. Now he's in such a place where nobody is to be found, because if somebody is there, then you have to ask that person. This is not an occasion to feel shy. This is an occasion where you go up and you find out which way is the qibla. So he doesn't know where is the qibla, nobody is present also. So at that time, Shariat says, exercise your mind and perform salah, but you're not exempted from salah. If he had to perform his salah, he exercised his mind, he said the qibla, for example, is in the opposite direction, because there was no one available, and he performed his salah in this direction. And when he terminated his salah, when he made salam, somebody came and said, you read in the opposite direction, Qibla is this way. A person, he goes a little off, Fuqaha have written up to 45 degrees you can go off. But more than 45 degrees you can't go, then the salah has to be repeated. But he read in a completely opposite direction. But he, on condition that he made tahari, he exercised his mind. Then somebody came and told him that you read in the opposite direction. Then to Fuqaha say that his salah is valid. Another masla that comes in one of the fatawa kitabs, fatawa darlum diyoban, the masla comes. If a person is dumb, he cannot recite, and he is deaf, he cannot hear. Now, qiraat is obligatory in salah. A person has to make qiraat. So a person is dumb, he cannot recite. Is salah still farz on this person also? Fuqaha say salah is farz on him too. Qiraat will drop off. The farziyat of qiraat, the compulsion of qiraat, that will drop off. But you still have to stand, you still have to go into ruku, you still have to go into sajda, and you still have to complete your salah. And if you don't do this much, then you're going to be sinful in the court of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. So there are various masail that prove the importance of salah. Another masail, the last masail that comes, that if a person commences a salah, it is haram to break the salah without a valid excuse. A person just started his salah, and now he wants to end that salah. Even if it's nafil. Nafil is nafil as long as you didn't start it. When you start a nafil, it becomes wajib to complete that now. For example, you started two rakats of namaz, it was nafil namaz. But the fact that you started it now becomes obligatory to complete it. Or a fast is nafil. You never started, it remains nafil. If you do it, you get thawab. If you don't do it, there's no guna. But when you start it, now it becomes obligatory to complete that nafil of yours. So it's haram for a person that started an act to now bring it to an end, that faraz, that namaz of his. Except there are certain situations. For example, somebody is stealing your property, your goods are being stolen. Or another Muslim person's goods are being stolen, and you in salah. So at that time you can terminate your salah to protect your goods. The second time you can break your salah is where there is perfection of that salah. For example, you go to a masjid, this area you came to a musalla, there's no namaz times on the board, nothing whatsoever. So you don't know what time, for example, is asr salah. So what you did, you said, let me start my namaz. So you just started your asr salah, Allahu Akbar. And a minute later, few brothers walked in and they started the jamaat. So now, your perfection of your salah is in the jamaat, not in your individual salah. So there fuqaha say, you can terminate that salah, but there are certain conditions there also. You will terminate that salah, and you will come and you will join this salah. And the third occasion is where somebody requires help. For example, there's a blind man is walking. And there's a fear now, there's a well in front. The blind man is going to fall in that well, he needs assistance. So at that time also a person can terminate his salah, and you go and assist that blind man, and then you come back, and then you read your salah again. So these are certain occasions. So no way is a person exempted from salah. Yes, the only place a person could be exempted is where a person becomes unconscious for five namazes or more. For five namazes or more, a person, he's totally lost his senses. He has become totally unconscious. He's lying 6 months unconscious, 3 months unconscious. So now Shariat won't make those salahs that he missed obligatory upon such a person. So we have understood the importance of salah. Now coming to this kitab, Anwar al-Salah, as I mentioned, the author of this kitab is Shah Ahmad Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayh. So Shah Ahmad Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayh, he was made Shaheed, he was a martyr, he had lost his life fighting against the British. And many of our Akabirin, many of our elders, our pious predecessors, they had fought against the British when they had come to India in 1857, when the British had come to India. Many of our Akabirin, they fought against the British. So one was Shah Ahmad Shaheed Rahmatullah Alayh, where he fought. Our ulama, they were in the forefront, whether it was politics, even up to this day, Maulana Arshad Madni Sahib, etc. Up to this day, they were in the forefront when it comes to politics. When it came to making the ibadat of Allah Ta'ala, they were in the forefront. When it came to jihad, they were in the forefront. So many of our Akabirin and pious predecessors, they fought against the British. Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Alayh, he was put into prison. And when he was put into prison, it is mentioned at that time, even it would be the day of Jumu'ah, Hazrat Shaykhul Hind Rahmatullah Alayh, he would dress himself, he would wear clean clothing, dress up for the day of Jumu'ah, and he would get ready. But he knew he couldn't go out of the prison. And he would come to the gate of the prison, and then he would say, Ya Allah, this was what was within my ability, this was within my control, that I have dressed up for the day of Jumu'ah, the greatness of this day, and I have come up to the gate. Beyond this, this is not in my control. And then he will go back inside. It is mentioned that when the first Ramadan came, he was in prison. The British had put him in prison. When the first Ramadan came, the Shaykh al-Hind rahmatullah started crying, but they used to hit him a lot, they used to beat him up, he used to get a lot of lashes, he used to be lashed on the back. So his student, Hazrat Maulana Hussain Ahmad Madni rahmatullah, he said that my ustad is in prison and I let him just go. So he says, now I need to go with my ustad also, I'll also go into prison. On one occasion, Hazrat mentioned that once Hazrat Maulana Abrar al-Haqtab Harudoi rahmatullah, Hazrat was in Karachi and he had a flight going back, most probably to India or wherever. And the flight for some reason was delayed or whatever it might be. So Hazrat had to be at the airport the whole night. So the Rakim Sahib rahmatullah said, my Shaykh, he's sitting at the airport and I'm at home in comfort. He says, no, take me. He went and he sat there at the airport. So Mullah Madni rahmatullah also, he said, my ustad is in prison and I'm sitting here. So he said, no, I'll go with my ustad in prison. So that day when Shaykh al-Hind rahmatullah was crying, so he asked, Hazrat, what's wrong? Did the British hit you a lot today? So he says, no, they didn't hit me. He says, why are you crying? What is the problem? So he said, Hussain Ahmad, that first time Ramadan is coming, I'm not Hafiz al-Quran, you not Hafiz al-Quran. We're going to be spending Ramadan without Khatam of Quran. So Hussain Ahmad Madni rahmatullah said, don't worry, I'll try and memorize every day. Every day during the day he will memorize, and one para he will memorize. And at night he will read that one para in Tarawih Salah. 1 month, Hussain Ahmad Madni rahmatullah became Hafiz al-Quran. He was had so much love for his ustad that it was cold. The water used to be extremely cold there. So there was no hot water. So the water would be kept. Mullah Hussain Ahmad Madni rahmatullah would put the water in the earthen pot or whatever jar, whatever they had in those days. He would put it in there. And he will then sleep with that jar against his stomach. So it's not going to make it hot. The heat of the body is not going to heat that water. But it will make it a little more warmer, a little more warmer. It won't be so cold as it would have been if you were to extract it, if you were going to remove it from the tap now. So he will keep it next to his stomach and he will sleep the whole night later. And in the morning, at tahajjud time, that same water will be used for Shaykh al-Hind rahmatullah alayh to make wuzu to read his tahajjud namaz. Shaykh al-Hind rahmatullah, they had, what was the ruhaniyat of deen? That is what we want from this kitab. The ruhaniyat, the spirituality of salah. When it came to Qurbani, they taught us what was Qurbani. Shaykh al-Hind rahmatullah used to keep his Qurbani animal for 1 year. 1 year he would keep it. And when he'd go to madrasa, that animal would follow him. And then he would go to the class, when he would come out, finish his dars, that animal would follow him back home. And few days before Qurbani, before actually slaughtering the animal, that Qurbani animal, he will feed it jalebi. He won't let the animal eat grass. He will feed the Qurbani animal jalebi. And then he will slaughter. Now how your heart must be attached to that animal, whole year, became part of you. How difficult it would be then to put the knife on the throat of that animal. And then he will slaughter that animal. And the moment he slaughters this animal, he will buy the animal for the next Qurbani. So Shaykh al-Hind rahmatullah, he also went to prison in this way. Also is mentioned about Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanoti, he also made hifz. He was on his way for Hajj, it is mentioned. That Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanoti rahmatullah, he was going for Hajj. In those days, the boat they used to sail according to the wind. So when he was on that, it would take up to 6 months sometimes to reach Makkah al-Mukarramah, maximum. So he says that one occasion he was on the boat and he was going for Hajj. They left in Sha'ban and Ramadan came. There were 350 passengers, Muslims. He says, we read Alam Tara the first night. And then he says that I couldn't take it. That we're reading Alam Tara, 350 Muslim passengers on the boat. So Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanoti Rahmatullah did the same thing. He says he memorized the Quran and then he would read the Quran at night. And one month he memorized the entire Quran. So we find that, we're talking about these Akabirin. The British, they fought against the British. Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanoti Rahmatullah Ali, once they had issued a warrant of arrest for Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanoti Rahmatullah, British, and they came in search of Hazrat Maulana. So they were informed that he'll be in a certain masjid. So then the police came and he was in the masjid, he was there. So they came to him, but they expected Mullah Qasim Sahib to be a great personality, well dressed. Our Akabirin were very, very simple. Very simple. One lungi, one kurta they would be wearing. Qari Siddiq Sahib Banvi rahmatullah alayhi, it's mentioned about him. And he used to travel, one packet, just one packet, plastic packet. What we carry in the supermarket, plastic packet, one kurta, one lungi they put in there, and they travel. But they say, Allah Ta'ala ne itne rob ata farmaya, jo salateen ko bhi nahi ata farmaya. So much of awe, so much of rob they had in them, that type of awe Allah Ta'ala didn't give to the kings also. That is, on the simplicity Allah Ta'ala had given them. So he saw Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanotvi, but they didn't know it's him. So they say, no, we're looking for this man, Mullah Qasim Sahib Nanotvi. So Hazrat, he didn't want to lie at that time. So what Hazrat did, where he was standing, he took one step, he moved away. And he said, Maulana Qasim Sahib was here just now. Just now he was here. So they said, this can't be Maulana Qasim Sahib. They went away also. Maulana Rashid Ahmad Gangohi Rahmatullah Ali. They found out, the British found out that he got arms, he's got weapons. So, and it was true, Maulana had, he had weapons also. Because they fought against the British. They were Mujahideen. So they said, we need to catch him. So they caught Maulana. And they brought him to, the British had established magistrate courts everywhere. So they brought him to the magistrate court. So they, when they brought him there, then the questioning started. They started interrogating him. So they asked him that, do you have weapons? So Maulana said, gee, he said, he had a tasbih. He said, ye mere hathiyar hai. There's my weapon against shaitan. وَمَنْ يَعْشُ عَنْ ذِكْرِ الرَّحْمَانِ نُقَيِّدْ لَهُ شَيْطَانَ فَهُوَ لَهُ قَرِينَ. Man that turns away from the zikr of Allah Ta'ala. Allah Ta'ala says that we appoint a shaitan upon that person. So the protection from shaitan is the zikr of Allah Ta'ala. So he said, this is my hathiyar. One man was walking past. Allah Ta'ala also helps them. And one man was walking past. You see, what's all this interrogation going on? So he says, ye to hamare mahalla ka muazzin hai. That this is the muazzin of our locality. What are you doing with this man? So they say, he looked like muazzin also. Let him go. So he also got freed. So many, many of our akabirin, we find that they had faced the British, they had fought against the British. Now, in this kitab, there is one term, or a term that we must have heard repeatedly. The term khushu and khudu. That we always hear the term khushu and khudu. Now, what is this term? What is the actual definition of this term? Inshallah, before we start the kitab, tomorrow we will discuss this, that what is khushu and what is the definition of khudu, and then we'll go into the kitab. Allah Ta'ala give us all the time.